This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is the final hour of Sharp Money from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Back in downtown Las Vegas, I'm Ben Wilson from our Circus Sportsbook studio. Joe Serralo hanging with me. Fun final hour coming up, Joe. We will do the segment that we've really been waiting for this entire time, our top five foods to be served at a 4th of July or any sort of barbecue. And I'm expecting Joe to take off the shirt, throw on the apron over there in LA, because I know you've got resources. We wait for that to come up in about a half hour. Also, rest of the baseball card. Joe, I know you have some bets here for the rest of the night tonight. One that does really intrigue me here, one of the 7 p.m. Eastern first pitches that we'll discuss between two teams who are certainly in postseason position, one on the wrong side in the San Francisco Giants, the other there clinging on to the first of the three NL wildcard spots in the Atlanta Braves. Couple updates right now. The Cubs finally get off the schneid. It's been such a disastrous couple of weeks there for the Cubbies, but they get two homers from Ian Happ today. My fantasy team thanks you, Ian Happ. 10-2 win for Jameson Taillon over Christopher Sanchez. As once again, with all those Phillies out in the lineup, big market move against him, and it finally comes to fruition today. Cubs is short dogs win, and it goes over 7.5. Red Sox finally get there in 12 innings, Joe. That was a tough luck loser of the day. 2-2 going to extras, and a market that was staunchly in support of the under ultimately comes up short. Game goes over 8-6-5 to the Red Sox over the Marlins. And that is your latest right now with three games in progress as we speak. And the Orioles, who you discussed earlier in the show, with a nice two-run spot in the third inning to take a 2-0 lead, back in the O's, trying to take now a three-game lead on the Yankees atop the AL East today in Seattle.
Yeah, Corbin Burnes can't strike anyone out. I've seen so many two-strike counts. I think he has one strikeout through 2 1/3. So slightly frustrating there, but the Orioles up 2-0. Who else? Gunner. It wasn't a first inning homer. It was a third inning homer. Wow, that curveball just made Bliss look silly by Burnes. But yeah, so we'll see. I mean, if the Orioles win and Burnes doesn't get to 8 strikeouts, it's a wash because that was a plus money K prop. So we'll see what happens there. Never going to cry about a wash, especially when we've been on a heater. But it would just be nice. These Mariners swing at anything and everything. All of a sudden now, They're fouling two strike pitches off, being selective, not chasing those breaking balls in the dirt on 0-2 counts. I don't know what's going on there, but not looking good for the K prop as he's about to throw his 40th pitch.
It is Corbin Burnes, though. You know he could catch fire at any moment. 2-0 there. 0-0 between Aronzy Contreras of the Angels, J.P. Sears of the A's. A game neither of us have action on. 0-0 in the bottom of the third there. As well as in Texas, the only other game going live. Looks like the Padres are about to put the clamps down and send the Texas Rangers to 9 games below 500. Michael King, a very good outing today, limiting the Rangers to just a single run. 3-1 there, bottom 9, in a game that has got more market support to the under there, Joe. That thing close, 7.5 juiced heavily, -125 to the under. Looks like it'll get there as the Padres, hey, give them a lot of credit, though. They have come alive these last couple of weeks. We're the hottest hitting team in baseball. Now they're doing it with pitching. I saw them in person a couple weeks ago at Petco, and they took 3 of 4 from my hometown Milwaukee Brewers. And it's a team that we've waited for, what, like 3 years for them to actually show their true colors and live up to expectations. And it seems like they're finally starting to turn a corner. It's only taken the worst crop of NL playoff teams after the division leaders we've seen in years for them to do so.
Yeah, the Padres are interesting. You know, I think a lot of people give them maybe more credit than they deserve for the last 3 years because they made it to an NLCS and, you know, took that series, took Philly pretty deep into that series. But the truth is the Padres have found their success in the past 3 years by getting on these little really hot spurts of action. They haven't been a consistent winner for the better part of 3 years. They've spent more time at or below 500. It's just, you know, they snuck into the playoffs in 2022. Well, I won't say snuck in. They had a pretty good record. But they got in as a wild card, then they got really hot at the right time. But they've been underperforming for the bulk of the past 3 years. And now this year, you know, they might be working their way into the playoffs. I'll give them credit. I thought that they were going to be a third place team. I didn't have them in the playoffs. We'll also see what happens. I was very high on Arizona coming into the year. I'm still not out on Arizona because their starting pitching is just starting to get a little bit healthy. They still need Eduardo Rodriguez and Merrill Kelly back. Those are going to be two huge acquisitions. When those guys get off the IL, it's going to be like you've traded for two great starters at the deadline. So I'm still high on Arizona, but right now San Diego's certainly padding their lead ahead of the D-backs and other wild card contenders as the deadline approaches.
No question. It also speaks to perception on San Diego that despite the great run to the NLCS, we still mostly, outside of that, remember a very frustrating, enigmatic regular season that ultimately culminated in a hot streak. Funny how it is working out with them right now. We'll talk more baseball a little bit later in the show. Four games left for us to break down. We will do that coming up. But, Joe, as part of our NFL betting guide being released, we're now diving into all the different futures markets that are out there. And these have become very popular because it is not one that requires you to sweat it out a full season and wait until January to collect winnings. Or if you've got a ticket that just has no chance, you still have to see it and your account is pending. That's the worst when it's sitting there for months on end. But the final winless team and the final undefeated team, both very intriguing markets. We'll start to the bad here, Joe, the last winless team, as it is an interesting handicap of you're combining poor teams with tough schedules out of the gates. What jumps out to you as you look at that last winless team market where the Patriots are your favorites at about 6-1?
Yeah, I mean, the Patriots are pretty understandable favorites here. Minnesota jumps out to me as a team with potentially some value. I don't have all of their schedules in front of me to dissect the Pats, the Panthers, the Titans, the Vikings. But I think Minnesota, with their question marks at quarterback, be it Darnold, be it McCarthy, you know, New England, probably the most realistic pick here. But if you're looking for value, I believe the Vikings have a pretty tough start to the season. Once you get past the Giants, and I think the Giants win that week one game. So if we can get that Vikings schedule up, I think it gets pretty difficult after the Giants, so that they could be in a position where if they don't steal one week one, they could be in some real trouble.
And that's part of what goes into this too. For the season, Vikings, the fourth toughest strength of schedule by the Vegas win totals that are out now. A lot of transition to when you're bringing in a new quarterback, regardless of who the team decides to start in week one. That's why those are two kind of keys to me when I look at this: transition, uncertainty, combined with tough schedule. We see it every year too with young head coaches, especially when it is a new head coach and a guy who has been a play caller, but never the head man, and who insists on still calling plays. And that's what Brian Callahan is going to attempt to do in Tennessee. Only Kyle Shanahan is the other who does that in the NFL and has done it well over the years. That's why he's still doing it. But that's a really tough transition to make. You're talking about a really young team. They've gutted so much within that front office and the roster composition of the Tennessee Titans. That's where I would look at 9-1. And it's a situation where, yes, you get two home games your first 3 weeks, but those are tough ass at home to the Jets and Packers, where fan split might be 50-50 or better in favor of the road team in each of those two games. And if you don't get a win in either of those, you're looking at road Miami, tough divisional game against the Colts, at Buffalo, at Detroit. It's not till, looking at this, Joe, as I look down my list here, week 8 against New England, where you will likely be favored in a home situation. That very easily could be an 0-7 start, especially if you are a believer that transition is as hard as it has proven to be in the past there with Brian Callahan.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly am, you know, on the Titans under 6.5 wins. I just, their offense, if you look at them compared to, you know, Minnesota, Carolina, New England, Minnesota's got talent with Justin Jefferson and Addison, obviously. But I really think that Tennessee has some talent on the offensive side. Like Minnesota, they have questions at quarterback, but Will Levis, you know, might be better than Darnold or McCarthy. I don't know if I would take Tennessee to be the last team to get a win. I just think that their offensive talent might break through at some point and surprise some people here and there. Again, I'm on them under 6.5. But I could see a surprise early out of Tennessee between Callahan and their personnel on offense.
They take on Chicago on the road as well, week one. You figure there will be quite a bit of emotion in that game. A lot of expectations there on the Bears in week one. As for the flip side here, we take a look at the teams on the last undefeated market that the 72 Dolphins will likely, I mean, it's almost close to a guarantee, we'll get to enjoy the spoils of their record standing for another season. Niners plus 750 to be the last undefeated team. Lions second at 8-1. Then you do have the Dolphins and Chiefs co-favorites at 10-1. It's funny how I always get a little bit more interested in the last winless team as opposed to the undefeated team, because it's a market that I really don't want anything to be a part of with it, Joe, just in full transparency. But anything here that stands out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to play the favorite, but I think the 49ers have a legitimate chance at being the last unbeaten. You know, when you look at San Fran's schedule, and this is one that, you know, I broke down the entirety of the NFC West a week ago with Dave Ross, so I have their schedule actually memorized pretty decently. I see the Niners, I said 7-1 into the bye was my prediction. And I think that they have a couple difficult games right before that bye. But as long as they get past the Jets week one, which I think they will do, Aaron Rodgers has always stunk at San Francisco. It gets really easy after that week one game, which should be a fun contest on Monday night. So, yeah, you see the Vikings. They're at the Rams. The Rams don't scare me this year, and that'll be a pro 49er crowd. You got the Pats, the Cardinals. The Seahawks never really stop San Francisco. It's Chiefs-Cowboys. That Cowboys game, I'll give them a win. It's really that Chiefs game. So, you know, they could be 8-0 going into week 10 if they beat Kansas City. If not, then, you know, I think 6-0 might be enough to be the last undefeated team. I love Detroit, and I'm high on the Lions this year, higher than most. I don't think that they will come out of the gate 7-0. So I think San Francisco and the Kansas City, they've the past couple of years shown us that they'll lose some regular season games that you can argue they shouldn't lose. So I think San Fran 6-0 could get them that unbeaten title.
Yeah, the way I normally get interested in this show is if you see a team that's got like a pick 'em week one, right? And then it eases up. But because of the tough start, you get longer odds. Philadelphia is the one team that does match that, where it's Green Bay. That's viewed to be a pick 'em. Eagles, short favorites there in Sao Paulo in Brazil, the neutral site game. But after that, you get three straight games against the worst division in football, at least arguably, the NFC South. 6-0 is very much attainable, but it's that big question of if for week one. So I'm always a believer of, you know, if you want to take the high variance position on that, you're getting 17-1, but you probably should not just bet that alone. It should be, all right, you'd look at Philadelphia if you had that much conviction in a week one spot against Green Bay, which to me, it's a toss up. I make the teams about even, and that's where the odds makers have it set. So many markets, though, for us to dive into. That's why we try to, you know, pick and choose, parse through all of them in the build up to this 2024-25 NFL season. We'll break down a 4-game night slate on the July 4th card in Major League Baseball when we come back here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
With our all-new NFL betting guide out now, there's never been a better time to become a VSIN Pro subscriber. For a limited time, you can get an annual subscription to VSIN Pro at an unbeatable price. It's normally $240 a year, but you can subscribe right now for just $199 with promo code SHARP. Plus, we'll throw in an extra month for free. That is 13 months of VSIN Pro access to everything we do, including daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all our special edition guides to keep you betting smarter all year long. Do not miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide with this incredible offer. Visit VSIN.com/subscribe right now. Use promo code SHARP, and you get 13 months of VSIN Pro for just $199 and instant access to our all-new NFL betting guide. We still have four Major League Baseball games to come as we're back on Sharp Money for the last hour. I am locked in on what has been a great tennis match. Leila Fernandez, short favorite over a legend, making a comeback. Caroline Wozniacki of Denmark, 5-all in the third set. That's what we love about betting Wimbledon, Joe. Yeah. Tight matches,
right,
third
right.
set, deep late. Doesn't matter the time or the day of the year or if it's a major U.S. holiday. It's still
un-American. You are un-American. There is a Baltimore Orioles Seattle Mariners game on, and you're locked into Wimbledon. Un-American. By the way, Caroline Wozniak, isn't she married? And I could be totally wrong here. Is she married to David Lee, the old New York Knicks?
She is. Yes, she is married to David Lee.
I missed that guy. I tried to model my game after him as a chunky white kid who played the five when I was in middle school. I miss that guy.
He's done very well with the long successful career. David Lee, now married to Caroline.
He's got
Wozniacki.
Rings, right? Didn't he win a ring or two in Golden State did. After the Knicks?
Yes, he did. Yes, Caroline Wozniacki once. When I remember covering a tennis tournament when she was engaged to Rory McIlroy. That was the big like a decade ago. That was the big athlete couple, but it was not meant to be. Sadly,
that's news to me. I didn't even know about that. When I think like big athlete couple, I think of PK and Lindsey Vonn. They were probably one of the biggest ones I could think of. I didn't even know Wozniak and McIlroy were a thing.
Yeah, it was. I don't know how they ever saw each other because those are the tours, the two that have the most globe-trotting, crisscrossing.
Right.
Like how exactly? I had a lot of questions. How exactly did that work? And eventually, it didn't. So we eventually found out.
Ben had a lot of questions. How does that work? And when can I fill in?
And well, yes, also also that too. 5-all in the third set with Wozniacki. She does have a break point on Leila Fernandez, the young Canadian who is the short favorite there in this match. Joe still sweating out his Baltimore Orioles off to a 2-0 lead in Seattle as they go to the bottom of the fourth there. Coming up, starting in about 2 hours here, Joe, our night slate for July 4th baseball. We begin in Atlanta. Logan Webb gets the ball for the San Francisco Giants against Charlie Morton of Atlanta. This is one that I do agree with the way the market has shaded this opener of 8 to the under here. It would be a first five look or nothing for me, though. That's the one that really intrigues me, where you get the first five 4. 2-2, you can at least get a push out of that. With Webb, it just doesn't get the credit he deserves for being a start-in, start-out, model of consistency. Sure, he doesn't strike out a lot of guys. It's less than 8 per 9 innings. Even though his numbers have dipped a little bit on the road this year, it more correlates to how poor the defense has been behind him at times for the Giants as a pretty bad road team. And with Charlie Morton, that's a pitcher you're going to isolate in some props, so I'll let you explain there. But I do like a couple of savvy vets able to navigate their way the first couple times through the order there in a low-scoring game with two offenses who have been very inconsistent throughout the course of this year.
Yeah, that's why I was looking at the Braves because, you know, I mean, look, if they were healthy, if this were normal times for the Atlanta Braves, being a favorite of just $1.35 at home would be considered a gimme by a lot of bettors out there when you look at that value. But their offense has been shaky. So is San Francisco's, though. And you said it. They are terrible on the road. You know who else isn't that good on the road? Logan Webb. He's a great pitcher. I agree with you. I'm not one of those, you know, new school people that all they care about are strikeouts, right? There's an art to Logan Webb's pitching style, but it doesn't translate on the road. He's got an ERA of about 2 at home and an ERA north of 4 when he leaves Oracle Park. He's 2-4 with a 4.08 on the road. And so I've made it a rule after being burned a couple times last year, I will no longer look at betting Logan Webb when he is not home. So instead, I'm targeting the other starter, Charlie Morton, over 17.5 outs. I got a fair price of laying $1.15. Yeah, he's gone over this in 5 of 10, 3 of his last 5, so the trend is a little better in his direction. Weird stat, and I know it doesn't matter what he did in 2008 now here in the year 2024, but going back to 08, I believe he's made 7 home starts against San Fran in his career, whether it be Atlanta, Pittsburgh, wherever he was. He's gone over this in 6 of those 7. So just a weird little nugget, but back to the present day, current Giants hitters hitting just at a 235 clip against Morton for their careers. He's also got some good strikeout numbers against San Fran, but they've been a weird team to bet. You know, one game they'll strike out 11 times, and then they'll go 3 games in a row with like 11 combined strikeouts. Definitely not like last year when the Giants struck out, I believe, more than almost any team in the National League a season ago. So I'm staying away from the K prop. I'm taking Morton over 17.5 outs in this one.
A few teams, Joe, with fewer road wins this year than the San Francisco Giants, including the teams you would expect, the White Sox, the A's, the Rockies, and the and the Miami Marlins, tied with the Chicago Cubs, though, for fifth worst. Just 17 road wins for the San Francisco Giants. That's why it's just a first five angle for me there today with the Giants and the Braves. We also get a attempt of a 3 of 4 series win there for the Milwaukee Brewers. Just the third franchise shutout in Brewer history at Coors Field. Only done it 3 times now in history after last night. Always makes me nervous then when I would be tempted to go to the well on an under here. It's 10.5. Tobias Myers, who had a great 5-start stretch, that came to an end over the weekend where he struggled with command early and often, was touched up against the Cubs. Now goes into Colorado here where the Brewers are getting market support up to $1.40 favorites. Actually, it's been a little bit more two-way now that I've updated the odd screen over the last hour. If anything, it's been support to the over. DraftKings just touched 11 with Cal Quantrill on the mound, and I can't say I blame bettors for doing that when just based purely on tradition, Joe, and you get a 3-run game at Coors, normally the next game, unless you have aces on the mound, you can generally bank on the offense coming back, and that would concern me today with Myers, who has been so, so good for the Brewers, but will that last rocky start be a harbinger of things to come? Certainly at Coors Field, I could see that being the case.
Yeah, 2 unders in a row in this series after they went to the over in game 1, and that's why I'm on the over. I got 10.5 earlier today, laid $1.15 on that as well, and I got the over in this one. Ben, it's the 4th of July. We need some fireworks, right? Some bats have to erupt. We can get them in D.C., and that 1-0 snooze fest where there wasn't a run scored until the bottom of the 8th, I'm taking some runs in this one, over 10.5. Quantrill's been really good for Colorado on the season as a whole, but his start was what was really good, his start to the season. Last 3 starts, he's allowed, I believe, 3, 3, and 5 in terms of earned runs. I think Milwaukee can tag him for a few. And, you know, Tobias Myers, you mentioned his last start being a shaky one. He's also never pitched at Coors Field. That worries me a little bit for a young kid, a rookie pitcher, who doesn't exactly know what he's quite getting into when it comes to the altitude and the elements over there at Coors Field. So I think this one could be where we get our 4th of July fireworks. I'm going over 10.5.
if there is a place you would assume fireworks would happen, Coors Field. Not the worst of ideas there. Brewers have taken two of the first three in that series. One more game between NL teams before we wrap up the segment here. Joe, is Landon Knack for the Dodgers. How many more starts will he make? He's pitching for his spot in the rotation there as he hosts the Arizona Diamondbacks, who really touched up Gavin Stone, a guy who had been very consistent and solid for the Dodgers until last night. D-backs put up 12 runs there in LA last night, and they get Zach Allen on the mound. It is not a shock as a result of that, Joe, to see some money come in on the dog here. Just updating my screen. This at one point was Dodgers minus 140. That has dipped in some shops as much as 15 cents here with Gallen getting the betting interest on the road.
Yeah, I love Zach Gallen. Another guy like Logan Webb, I've become not as hesitant as I am with Webb, where it's a flat-out refusal for me to bet him on the road, but I've become increasingly hesitant to bet Zach Gallen on the road. And that one's bizarre because we all know the Giants play at a pitcher's park. Arizona is probably the second easiest hitter's park across Major League Baseball. But Gallen much better at home than he is on the road. I'm still going to take him, though, for a nerfy in this one. Him and Landon Knack. Knack's been great. I mean, he doesn't go all that deep into games. That's my one knock on Knack. But three earned in his last 19 and a third innings of work. He's been a really good surprise for a Dodgers team that's lacking starting pitching. And with the nerfy, you know, I only had to lay $1.10. You're getting a really fair price because of the Dodgers, because you always get a good price on a nerfy with how solid the top of the Dodgers lineup is. But Ben, I hope I don't jinx something here. I don't really believe in jinxes. I'm not that superstitious. I haven't lost a Dodgers nerfy all year. People call me crazy for betting nerfies in Dodger games because they actually play to the Yerfie at one of the highest clips in Major League Baseball. But when I've picked my spots and they've been selective, I haven't lost. I haven't gotten burned like the Phillies and Yankees have occasionally burned me. So I think this is a good spot. The top three, presumed top three of that Dodgers lineup, Otani, Will Smith, Freddie Freeman, 10 for 40 against Gallen in their careers, modest 250 average, only two extra base hits though. So I think having Mookie out of that lineup is a big advantage for Gallen in terms of matchups. And at $1.10, I'll lay that for the nerfy.
Look, I would say as someone, along with our producer, Wyatt Tomchek, you're talking to a couple of play-by-play guys. We will always dissuade the notion of jinxes existing. However, there are a lot of bettors who just heard what you said, and they're like, why would you do that to yourself, Joe? Why? What's the point? Why, you know, why not just
make it that much more impressive when I win?
But again, we're on your side. I'm just telling you. I mean, most people enjoying their barbecues right now are just like, why would he do that? I mean, do they want me to also mention Landon Knack's 208 BAPIP is not sustainable? You know, maybe that's not the best idea, but anyway.
Not the BAPIP. Oh, no.
Not the BAPIP, because that has to come up or come down, depending on where it is at. That's why we love betting baseball every single day. Speaking of barbecues, it's a segment everybody's really been waiting for on this 4th of July. What are our top five barbecue foods? We will discuss that next. Break down the rest of the MLB card. Track some Wimbledon coming down to the finish line.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
If you go on VSIN.com right now, you can check out Tyler Shoemaker's WNBA best bets for tomorrow's loaded card. Adam Burke's best bets for the rest of the baseball slate today. And Wimbledon best bets for tomorrow, where the final match of the night just wrapped up. That's all on VSIN.com, optimized for your mobile viewing. And a new look, also including betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides. Shout out Caroline Wozniacki, plus 130 dog today. Gets it done 7-5 in the third over Leila Fernandez in a match that ends at almost 10:30 local time there in London. And also, while we say God bless the USA today on July 4th, Joe Cirillo, God bless the roofs at center court at the All England Club, allowing us to watch tennis deep into the night, UK time. A great invention.
You know, if you want to be an expatriate and watch Wimbledon on the 4th, yeah, I guess you could call it a great invention. It's not my style. As a proud American, I will be watching baseball all day, nonstop.
I'm not shy about it. I believe it was Will Hill, our esteemed colleague here at VSiN, who once called me a terrorist for not being more excited about NFL preseason. And I was like, Will, I'm sorry.
Terrorist, treasonist, I'll call you all of those, Ben.
Yeah, it was good. So I feel like, yes, you have to really, you really have to dive deep. Although I think after you see my 4th of July barbecue list, the top five, Hopefully I've done something to assuage the American people. Wozniacki gets that win. You were saying our brief update here before we get into that, Joe, for those sweating out Orioles, first five tickets or first five unders, which were very popular bets today. Homer Julio Rodriguez off Corbin Burns to make it a 2-1 game there, bottom five. So you're still hanging on for dear life if you got those first five Orioles tickets. But a lot of two-strike counts, it looks like, today, Joe, for Burnsy. Just can't get him home more than you would like to see.
Yeah, a lot of two strikeouts that haven't cashed in. He actually just, the umpire ruled, picked up his fifth, or no, did the umpire rule it? I don't know. A lot of people thought he just got his fifth strikeout, but it looked like a foul tip knuckle curve in the dirt by Ty France. So he's got another 1-2 count with none out in the fifth. He's got four strikeouts on 60, that pitch count, right? 68? I didn't think so. He's in the mid-60s on his pitch count, four strikeouts. It's going to be a sweat. Yeah, it says 69 pitches. I didn't think we were that deep already. So it's looking increasingly like that'll be a loser. They're up 2-1. Let's see if they can at least hold out, win the game for me.
You still got life, but it will take some better execution on the two-strike pitches there for one.
Another Corbin single, Burns. Two strikes.
Yes,
unreal.
There you go. Why does that always happen to us? I don't know. Something about betting baseball. I think it's because Joe did not shed his shirt during the last break and go grab the apron, which, would you like to let people know what, as a proud Italian, what your apron says over there?
Yeah, I do have an apron. I've busted out. I think I've only worn it once, but it does say I don't need recipes. I'm Italian. And, that proud Italian heritage is going to come through a little bit in this segment, Ben.
Look, there's nothing I can do to really knock that. I mean, it is what it is. And even if I did try to do that, our producer, Wyatt Tomchek, 25% Italian, as we found out yesterday. So I would just get the blowback regardless.
One of the family.
Yes. Let's start with yours, Joe. We have the top five foods for 4th of July barbecues. We'll get this loaded up here in just a second, because I want to let you get the start. And because of your great apron, because of your heritage here, you can also provide some insights into everything that you are offering. You are going very wide ranging here with this 4th of July food options for the barbecue.
Oh, yeah. So starting off in the five hole, I had to include a dessert, right? And I figured, what better way to show our patriotism than a nice red, white, and blue trifle for dessert? This is a 4th of July staple for me growing up. You got the strawberries, you got the blueberries, you got the custard and cream and the cake, bringing in the red, white, and blue. This needs to be the centerpiece of every table. I know, it's a hot day, the 4th of July. People, they like their ice pops, they like their ice cream. That's all good and well. This needs to be at the center of every table when dessert comes out at the cookout. Now, 4 through 2, now we're talking side. And I'm starting with artichoke dip because that's an instant winner, right? If you want to start off and make a bold statement right out of the gate, you slap an artichoke dip down on someone's table at the cookout on 4th of July, everyone's going to be happy that you showed up, right? That is instantly, people are drinking, partying. They might not want to stop and say hi to everyone who rolls through the gate to your backyard. You come with an artichoke dip, everyone's coming over and saying hello to you. Number 3, corn on the cob. This is just the classic, right? You would go from a bold statement like the artichoke dip to just a classic winner. Everyone loves it. If you don't love it, you're un-American. Season that bad boy up. No boiled corn. You're throwing it on the grill. You're seasoning it up and you're enjoying life. Number 2, America's a nation of immigrants, folks. So we've got to put some of our flair from where we came from into this list. And that is a nice cold pesto pasta salad. None of the boring, plain mayonnaise filled macaroni salad, a pesto pasta salad. Usually pesto is the main dish. Usually it's served warm, but you do this over a cold pasta salad. You cut up some cherry tomatoes, a little fresh mozzarella in there, and you are enjoying life. Number 1. And I love that you guys even put the adjectives in there over this. A fat, thick, juicy, medium rare cheeseburger. Not a hot dog guy. Sorry, they're gross. They're flat out gross. I'm not saying I've never eaten a hot dog. I'm not saying I've never enjoyed a hot dog. But if you're going to give me a big, juicy cheeseburger over a hot dog, I'm taking it 10 days out of 10. Besides, this is America, right? Everything here needs to be bigger. I mean, no one can tell me one hot dog fills you up, right? If I'm eating hot dogs, I need like 3 of them just to be satisfied. Give me a big burger with all those sides. That, my friends, is a 4th of July feast.
I like the inclusion of the medium rare too, since that is generally a hot button topic amongst, okay, what's the proper setup for your meats. I appreciate that you included that, and you included the right decision on that too. I guess the only pushback would be, why not more meat, Joe? Why not more? You're not a fan of enough meat. You only want one option. You don't
I mean, I wanted to enjoy the sides. If you're going to throw sausages on the grill, I'm all in on those. You know, yeah. A nice spicy Italian sausage to go on that. Hell yeah, sign me up.
I might have intentionally excluded the Italian sausage just because I knew it would get so much run today. That doesn't mean it would not be included in mine. It's just you had to cut it off somewhere. I went very heavy on meat. Now, it should be known, we have done in the past our Masters, our hypothetical Masters Champions dinner, ooh, and I got raked over the coals for being, in the words of one Matt Eumanns, who will be coming up next here on VEASAN, too bougie and over the top when I was like, look, if I won the Masters, I would like the highest top shelf of all of the foods. But this is more of a patriotic man of the people type thing. So just because I have erred in the past, I will now make up for it right now. And we will go with, we'll start with the dessert here. I also like you, Joe. I went with that to start things off at number five. I'm a Wisconsin guy. This menu is going to reflect my Midwestern roots and values. And we love anything dairy. That includes beer, cheese, milk. The Wisconsin State Fair, can't recommend that highly enough if you want to try about 50 different flavors of milk, including flavors you never would have thought imaginable. But frozen custard is the only way to end these sorts of barbecues where we will be ingesting lots of meats. We need something to help settle and continue our bodies to be moving forward throughout the rest of the night if we are going to be enjoying such barbecue. So frozen custard, to me, that is the gold standard of dessert. There's a lot of ways you can do that, so I felt I would keep this simple and open for interpretation. Our one crossover here, Joe, that we do agree on, I'm glad you included it. It is corn on the cob, which as I've aged, yeah, I have gained such a more greater appreciation for. I think as a kid, I just, you know, it was a nuisance. You get it stuck in your teeth and it's hard to appreciate until you get a little bit of age on you. So I'm first off, before I get into my meats, Joe, I'm glad that we agreed on the corn on the cob. That is a staple that is as underrated as any barbecue outfit as there is.
It's nice being able to come together on one thing on this holiday.
We knew there would be one. We just didn't think it would be corn, but
You're watching tennis in England right now, which I absolutely think is un-American of you, but corn is the ultimate equalizer. That's what brings us back together.
Corn does, yes, bring us all together. All right, on to the meats here. I want variety. And again, this is due to, in part, my Wisconsin roots, where we like a variety of sausages. I'm actually kind of with you, Joe. I like, because I've been exposed to so many different types of sausages, I'm not the biggest hot dog guy, but you cannot be a Wisconsinite and from the Midwest and advocate for a barbecue without the inclusion of ribs, one, and then bratwurst, two. And I have brats at the very top of my list because there's so many ways you can have your beer brats. You can have them with sauerkraut. There's a lot of different ways to imbibe on your bratwurst. Chorizo is kind of my wild card here because I wanted A, to put a middle finger up to Joe's Italian heritage and not include Italian sausage, and B, because chorizos are just damn tasty. You have Italian sausage, chorizo would be your Mexican sausage, extremely spicy, gives you that kick. And while ribs, yes, are the con is that they're messy. The pro is that they are absolutely delectable and if cooked properly, fall off the bone to the degree that you are not just in a state of flux with your hands the whole rest of the barbecue. Those are my three meats I went with. Ribs, chorizo, and then bratwurst is the king of the crop. I'm sorry the Italian did not make the cut, but I've had it in the past. It is very tasty.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's inexplicable that you left Italian sausage off the list. But I really can't fight going three meats. I wanted to emphasize the sides and have my one meat be the centerpiece. Man, if you're throwing ribs on my plate on the 4th of July, that for me would actually trump hot dogs and any sausage of any nationality. I'll take the ribs on there. I love that. By the way, take some of the extra leftover barbecue sauce that you lathered up on those ribs, put it on the corn. I think we've got a winner that can bring people together.
Not a bad idea.
I think, Ben, this November, that can bring people in this country together. Barbecue sauce on your corn.
I'd rather bet NFL than be on the campaign trail. I'll be fully transparent with you. Alas, I think it's a good idea, though. This is a great way, too, to get into our final hour of the show. We'll also give some final thoughts. One more MLB game to run through. Some last recap of best bets. We'll do all of that next. I'm getting really hungry. Oh, need to eat. It's 4th of July, after all, here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSiN NFL Betting Guide. The guide is packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter, including in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections, your quarterback and head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, and best futures bets from the VSiN experts, including MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Coach of the Year awards. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or just getting started, our NFL Betting Guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. Visit VSiN.com/guide to get your copy of our all-new NFL Betting Guide today. That is VSIN.com/guide. A big thank you to everybody behind the scenes here at our Circus Sportsbook studio helping us out with our producer Wyatt Tomchek, Joe Serralo joining me from LA. I'm Ben Wilson, doing our best to keep it entertaining here on the 4th of July. And I think we just did that, Joe, with our breakdown of our five heartiest barbecue foods. I was not watching the hot dog competition earlier today because I'm not afraid to admit it just makes me sick. And Wyatt will agree with me on that. I don't know about you, but we did at least have an upset today. Plus 850 underdog did cash, which was actually significant in the hot dog contest. But I'm glad I did not watch it.
And what was that guy's name? Do you have the name in front of you?
It was Patrick Bertoletti, the wife of Mickey Sudo, or the husband of Mickey Sudo. Mickey Sudo Bertoletti is the wife, and she won on the women's side as a giant favorite. But she did go over. She flew over her prop total of, I believe, 40.5, and it was on Follow the Money, which was a fascinating interview. I mean, I'll watch the interview. I don't want to watch them eat the hot dogs, but fascinating to hear them break down the cycle and how they do that. And she crushed her over today. So that was actually useful betting intel.
Big day for Bertoletti, man. Italian athletes just continuing to dominate across different landscapes, different sports, whether it's competitive eating or tennis with our guy Yannick Sinner. I mean, Italians are just really this 4th of July making a statement.
That's got to be an expensive household, though, the Bertoletti pseudo household when you're housing.
Could you imagine their grocery bill?
50 plus dogs in 10 minutes, just the training alone. And that's not a joke. That's all in all seriousness. I don't know how they do it.
That's disgusting.
Alas, it is. Yeah, it's really gross. I believe this is the fourth straight year that I have hosted on July 4th. It's a VSiN tradition unlike any other. I know there was one year we were on the air live while it was going and ESPN actually lost the feed as it was about to end, which produced just mass chaos, but was also great because that meant I didn't have to keep watching it and almost vomit like I was kind of going towards. But luckily that stopped before it actually happened, fortunately.
You know, Ben, growing up in New York, people have always asked me if they're from out of town. They're like, oh, so you've been to the hot dog eating contest, right? And my answer to that has just never changed. It's hell no. That would be the biggest waste of my time. Why would I want to deal with traffic on the Belt Parkway going from Long Island into Brooklyn? The Belt Parkway has to be the worst road ever imaginable in this country. And then go to Coney Island, which is a place, frankly, I don't want to go to any day of the week, let alone on a hot, humid day when it's overcrowded and it's going to be smelly. Like, look, I love being a New Yorker. It's just like, you know, it's like Times Square, right? No New Yorker wants to waste any time in Times Square. Any New Yorker will tell you Times Square is the worst place on planet Earth. Coney Island for the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest, right up there. No real New Yorker wants to be there in just sticky, sweaty, smelly humidity, watching people stuff themselves with 60, you know, casing-wrapped pieces of pig intestine. No, thank you.
I mean, Michael Scott always taught me that Sparrow's was the best pizza in New York. I mean, I'm just seeing what came in on the TV as a young, you know, a young inspired.
Are you trying to get me fined by the FCC over here? Is that what we're talking about?
That's what happened on TV. I'm just telling you, Joe. It's what happened. I share those same sentiments from my travails to the Big Apple. By the way, if you're wondering on Joey Chestnut, apparently some contract dispute going on. He's doing his own thing. He's streaming it on his YouTube live right now in El Paso, Texas, where he's trying to out-eat four U.S. Military vets. He has to out-eat them combined, though, in 5 minutes. I don't know what they're eating, but good for Joey Chestnut. But again, that unfortunately doesn't move the needle for me. I don't think it moves the needle for Joe either. That's why we're here talking baseball and breaking down useful things to actually bet on as opposed to the hot dogs, which we have one more game still to get through, Joe, the rest of the baseball card here. Zach Eflin for Tampa Bay, Alec Marsh for the Royals. Marsh, also one of the five most profitable pitchers. If you're just betting him every single game just by pure ROI, those numbers, if you haven't done so already, check out the Beating the Book podcast. Gil Alexander with Mark Borchard, they did a really good deep dive on the first half of the season so far, some of the advanced stats and most profitable individuals and teams to this point. But Marsh and the Royals have been very, very good at home here, seeing a move toward them. Eflin been solid this year, but about 10 cents a line movement there toward the home dog, technically speaking, Joe. You can find the Royals there at home at even money today. 8.5 is your total. Our last game to break down. Anything jump off the page to you in that one?
Yeah, I've got no action in this one, but them as a home dog is really intriguing to me here. Even though, you know, that dog price might be laying $1.05 at some shops or, you know, even money. Hey, shop around always. If you can get the best price, why not do it? That surprises me. Tampa's certainly the hotter team coming into this one. As of late, they've clawed their way back to a 500 record. But Alec Marsh, to your point, the Royals win when he's on the bump for some reason. He's had a really good year. He's not their ace. He's not even one of their top three guys. But the Royals are littered with really good starting pitching. And if Marsh is your number four, your number five, I'd say you're in pretty darn good shape. I'm intrigued by his under 2.5 earned runs number. You have to lay $1.20 for that. It's the best price on the market. Again, it's not an official play out of me, but it's something that Marsh has actually done really well with earned run props this year. And at a fair price like that, at home in a pitcher's park like Kauffman, that's probably the most intriguing way from a prop perspective to bet this one. Unless you want to just say, hey, Zach Eflin's had a terrible year after being really good last season, and just take the Royals at a essentially an even number.
And it is another point of how good bullpens can be and how they can support starting pitchers. As much as we think of betting baseball in a more traditional sense of it is betting the starting pitchers, you know, it's a 6-5 record for Alec Marsh this year, but he's won a bunch of games that there were no decisions that his bullpen carried the load and the Royals were able to rally a team that has been very, very good. It's interesting on them going long-term because we don't view them as general buyers. It's been perennially a team that makes smaller moves, Joe, and as a smaller market club, you understand that the way the mentality is for KC. It's interesting though to see that -110 to make the playoffs when a lot of the pitching stuff, really the meat of what you need to be a playoff team, has been there with very, very good numbers from the Seth Lugos to the Michael Wacha's and so forth. It's a team that is in pretty good position right now. It's a question of can they hold off some of these other groups like the Red Sox, who figure to have more resources there and who could have, you could paint a picture of having a higher probability of making a push with some pre-trade deadline acquisitions as we go forward. I just found that number to be interesting. It's probably fair, but the Royals are a team that should be talked about seriously right now with what they have done over their first 80-plus games as a legit playoff team.
I mean, they definitely should. I've been saying that, Ben, since the middle of April, that the Royals were a team to buy into, to take seriously. I mean, back then, you can get them at, I think, as high as 7-1, 3 weeks into the season to make the playoffs. I've taken this team seriously from the start. Quick nugget on the Alec Marsh thing that you brought up. He's 6-5, but in his 15 starts, the Royals are 10-5.
Yep.
So if you're betting KC on a day Marsh starts, they're 4-0 in his no decisions. I think that in large part was because they were 5-0 in April in Marsh's starts. Since then, just 5-5 when he takes the bump. He's come back down to earth a little bit. But with their pitching, they're definitely a team to fear a bit, to take seriously. The one thing is, Ben, they would need to get better, I believe, at the deadline if they're actually going to make the playoffs. Tampa Bay is nipping on the heels. Houston is surging. Their lineup stinks. There's no other way to put it, right? They're strong up top with Bobby Witt and Salvi Perez, and I love Vinny Pasquantino. Why would I not love Vinny Pasquantino? But the bottom of their lineup, when you get down past like that 4-5 spot, it's pretty darn bad. So Kansas City is going to need to bolster their lineup if they want to be able to sustain the success that they've been really riding their starters to thus far.
And especially on the road, the home road splits are just astounding on KC. Third worst WRC plus on the road, second worst batting average. They're hitting below .220 as a team on the road. Going to have to be a little more consistent, too, when you think about the teams behind them giving chase, Joe, to your point. As we wrap up today, you do also have some best bets for those who might have missed them. Just tuning in now, looking for some action here before the late games get underway. What do you have here, Joe, rest of the night in the baseball card?
Yeah, rest of the slate. It's Morton over 17.5 outs, laying $1.15. It's the over, some fireworks at Coors Field, over 10.5, also laying $1.15. And it's the Nerfy in LA, Dodgers D-backs, laying $1.10. That's probably my favorite of the final three plays, is that Nerfy at Chavez Ravine. Ben, final minute here as we wrap it up. Do I buy in on the Brewers money line laying $1.35, or do I just stick to my over? Are you a little hesitant with Tobias Myers?
Look, I've watched this Rockies team pretty close throughout the year. I mean, they're horrible.
I'm sorry.
They are really, really bad. I've done that just for betting purposes more so than anything. I just have a little bit of concern on Tobias Myers. He's started to come back to earth. It's his first ever start in Coors Field. just the third ever Milwaukee team shutout in Coors Field in their franchise history yesterday. Just naturally, that concerns me a little bit. Brewers are certainly the right side, but they are accurately priced as a road favorite. I would just stick with the bet you have there in pocket, Joe. That 10.5 over that has gotten a lot of action to that over today. Might as well just ride with it. Blast hanging out with you as always, my man. We'll see you again soon.
Absolutely, Ben.
For Joe Serallo, for Wyatt Tomchek, a blast hanging out with you all for the last 3 hours on Sharp Money. Up next, Matt Eumanns and Wes Reynolds take you home. 3 more hours on VSiN Primetime right after this. We'll be right back.